had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
We have a jam-packed pod ep for you today.
Mm-hmm. Very low energy, apparently.
Very low energy. Sorry.
No, just kidding. We do have a jam-packed pod. We had Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did.
And that was more interesting, actually, than I thought it would be. We had some predictions about how it would go, and I would say they were sort of went the way I predicted, though at times for different reasons.
Yeah, you know? I don't think it differed too much from the baseline expectation there. It was calm. That was good.
But should we do grab bag and then that?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that a better way to organize it?
Yeah.
Don't you worry, don't be sad. It's the audio grab bag.
All right. I have actually three grab bags.
Oh, wow.
Two of them are related in a weird way, because if you watch a lot of like manosphere, like man advice,
yep,
that's, you know, it's aimed at, you know, leveling up as a man.
Yep. Sure.
Not in the like ordinary like be a good dad, but like how to, you know, get rich quick and
yeah,
get the hottest ladies.
Yeah, of course.
That kind of advice. You also get funneled into just kind of personal finance stuff, some of which is not like get rich quick.
Yeah.
Variety. You know, the algos are not fully understanding. Like, no, you don't understand. I just want people who want to tell me about like crypto and drop shipping and stuff. I'm not actually looking for someone who's sort of more seriously giving like 401k advice.
Absolutely.
But the algo is also right that, you know, essentially this is the same content.
Yeah.
You know, just for different niches. So we got this one. Dave Ramsey, who is like one of the more sort of famous, perhaps the number one personal finance guy.
Yeah.
You know, he has his radio show and his books, and he's done a really good job of like tying it into being a Christian.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's just genius in that way, like, because he can just kind of go church to church to church.
Yeah.
And like give his personal finance shtick. And he dedicates a little bit of his talk to how it's Christian what he's doing. And you also need to do charity and stuff, yeah, or whatever. And then it's just like hard sell on all his products and whatever.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. I mean, that's just a brilliant, brilliant move. But he has some weird things that he promotes that aren't actually optimal and don't really make sense. And
that's not surprising.
He somehow got onto a podcast with a couple of people who are kind of more like edgy personal finance guys.
Okay.
You know, who, and they try to get him on one of his problems.
Okay.
If you could borrow $1 billion, 0% interest for 10 years, would you do it?
No.
Even though you could put it in treasuries and pay off after the 10 years. You could lock in 10-year treasury right now, 10% or 5%.
No.
It's not worth it.
I don't borrow money.
There we go.
So, you know, because Ramsey's shtick is he's very anti-debt.
Yeah.
And he's always trying to get you to, like, pay off all your debt. And it's all, like, that's the first step. After an emergency fund, it's all debt, debt, debt.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you're slightly more sophisticated as a personal finance person, you recognize that, well, it may or may not make sense to put the marginal personal finance dollar towards debt reduction, mm-hmm, because the debt might be low interest, like a mortgage, mm-hmm, or whatever. But Ramsey's really, you got to pay off your house. You got to, mm-hmm, pay off your house. And it's like, well, my mortgage rate's 3%. Why would I pay off my house? And so they get him. Like, okay, he says he has this hard rule. What if you could get a $1 billion loan for 0% interest? Meaning you could just dump it into a guaranteed fixed rate of return and just bank. Like, they were basically saying, would you take a $50 million interest over 10 years just free? And he's like, nah, because I'm against debt. Doesn't make sense. They got him. They're laughing at him. It's real funny. You know, when you bring this up in the personal finance world, people will defend him by saying, like, look, he's dealing with people who they're essentially, because this is the true, when we saw that Netflix show about personal finance, a lot of people they're dealing with are people who just have, like, spending addictions.
Yeah. I mean, God, same. Fuck.
And so it's just like, yeah, for those people, it's better to just kind of keep it simple and tell them just pay your debts and stuff.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't necessarily make sense. All right. Next up, in the same vein, we have another. This is, you know, on the other end of the spectrum of helping you live your life with money. Let's see what he has to say.
How can I make $1 million? No, motherfucker. How can you today pick up a damn book that teaches you what the history of money is? This thing that you're pursuing, you don't even know what it is. You're just chasing it like every other motherfucker chases it. I don't chase, I attract. I'm literally just sitting here and money comes to me. How? You don't think it's real? Don't worry. Don't think it's real. More money for me. It's okay. Keep doing your thing. Once I get it, bro. Stop being a hustler. Start being a boss. Starts right here.
Book teaching you the history of money. This is a man of intellect and culture.
That's what you need to do.
That's going to help you make money, is to understand the history of people having a sort of universal exchange for goods.
And of course, he's trying to sell you membership into his club called the Capital Club.
Oh, okay.
Where you'll learn all these tricks about the history of money or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure that's extremely enlightening and very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it might seem like a lot, a few thousand dollars a month to be in the club, but I mean, the return on that is unbelievable with the tips and tricks.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Probably then, minting out millionaires on the daily.
And then we have this from perhaps the top TikToker in Iceland.
The reason why Icelanders are so happy is because the government takes just 60% of our money and gives it to the unhappy people. And also the survey is done in the summertime.
Okay.
There you go.
He's solved it. He's figured it out.
He's figured out
all these articles about why the Nordics are the happiest in the world. And he's like, well, you know, we're taxed at a high rate and we have a big welfare state. And also they do the surveys in the summer.
You know, the summer, that's fun. That's the fun time to be there. So
amazing accent. One of the most interesting accents I think I've ever heard in my life. I think I've only heard it on like Bjork before. It's really could listen to that like 500 times, like that horrible video Jane is into right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We won't go into that.
She's interested in a little short song video.
I think she's interested in the idea of having a friend group that would make a video like that.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah. I think that's probably, she's like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if my friends, we made like a video where we sang the whole thing. But,
yeah.
All right. So the big activity on Thanksgiving, and the one we were all gearing up for, at least for me, you know, I had my notes app. I had a little note ready because I was going to take notes for the pod, was how's the trip to New York City going to go?
Yeah.
Right? That's the big episode because I've done it before. Last time was in Christmas, and I've collected some information about the behavior of the various people involved.
Yeah.
And I've created theories and models of that behavior that lead me to predict certain things.
Yeah, you're like an AI that's trained on my family's behavior.
Yeah, so we're going to go. So let's start even before trip. So the day before, we finally get solidified. Everyone knows, in theory, we're going to go to the Bryant Park Holiday Village, which is like the biggest little, you know, you go and buy... whatever. Every person in the country thinks that they can make jewelry or whatever. And you go.
All right.
And you buy. There's a bunch of little boutique things.
Right, there are some gems in there. There are some gems.
No, there are. You know, you can buy some cool, like, ornaments, and people are making, like, T-shirts, and, you know, there are a few
There's candy.
Well, yeah, the candy.
I mean, the food situation is crazy.
The food situation is pretty wild. The ice skating would be pretty cool if it were possible to actually get.
I got my kids, like,
a reservation for it, which is almost
like
impossible.
A croissant, but it's vertical, and they cut the tip off, and they fill it with cream cheese frosting, and then they put, like, chocolate syrup, Nutella, marshmallows, graham crackers on it. I got those for my kids. It was wild. That
yeah.
thing was nuts.
It looks like an ice cream place, and then you get yeah. there, and it's set up like an ice cream, which is actually yeah. pretty genius, because you can actually eat it walking around.
In place of the ice cream, there is just a huge quantity of cream cheese frosting.
Cream cheese frosting on top of a Nutella-filled croissant, and then there's then they have a few different flavors, which have, like, different little things they put on
kind
the top.
Kind of reminded me of, like, a Pinkies Out Texas State Fair.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got that flavor of goods to it, right?
Novelty food.
This is just crazy novelty food that's, like, the most insane brain-juicing foods we can think of, and we just mash them together in various ways.
It is very good.
It is very good.
And they, yeah. And there's a carousel, and at times there's Santa, though I don't think Santa was there on that day.
No, I didn't see Santa.
But that's the initial plan, but then there's always the question of eating. And Liz was really pushing them, and I thought this was kind of amusing, we should go to Koreatown.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of where we push anyone who come, any adult, you know, sort of that comes and, like, we're showing the city or whatever.
Yeah, who comes from out of town to New York City, because it's a unique New York City thing that you probably don't have in your hometown, and it's really good food.
It is very neat. No, it's very, very neat, and it makes sense for most, like, adults who come who are kind of in that vein. You're dealing with older people who are of a more conservative variety. It's a little bit different. The other thing is, you know, the go-to place, at least for us, is that kind of wild three-story food court.
Yeah, and it's all Korean vendors, and what's great about it, and what I thought would make it work for my parents, of course, turns out I was wrong, was, you know, there's, if you're like an advanced Korean food eater and you actually like the super spicy stuff, you can get that. Yep. You can also just get, like, a corn dog.
Yeah, because they have, like, there's a special Korean hot corn dogs.
And those are amazing.
They are good.
If you like corn dogs, they're incredible.
They have a Flaming Cheetos crusted corn dog. And you can also get it where instead of the dog in the middle, it's just cheese. So it's like
a giant mozzarella stick.
A giant cheese stick. And then you can pick your different options. You've got, like, the potato, the normal, or the, like, flaming hot crust. And, you know, there's a lot going on there. Or, like you said, they also just have, like, a chicken place.
Yeah, they just have, like, a fried chicken place where you can just get Korean fried chicken, and you can get it spicy if you want, but you can also just get it, you know,
just
baby.
Just get regular ass. Yeah, that's what I get the kids.
Yeah.
And that place has the kimchi cheese fries.
Yeah, those look incredible.
And
anyway,
the cheese balls. But
the food
is
really good.
It's a genius place to take people for all the reasons given. But I'm thinking, like, oh, boy. Okay, so it's all, everything, by the way, is always about your father. Anything you pose, because your dad, your brother, and your mom, sure, like, anything you could think of, they would go. And
they're very agreeable and interested in new experiences. And
you can take the kids wherever you go. So everything revolves around trying to figure out what your dad will or won't do or tolerate or whatever. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, there's no, you know, one, it's Korean. And yeah, you're right. You can just get basic stuff that, you know, if you want, you can get something that pretty much looks like KFC.
Yeah. Mm.
Or, but then there's the issue of just sitting in these big communal tables and stuff and not being waited on. And, you know, and, like, I think that's a big part of the...
You get your drinks out of a vending machine. You know, it's fun. I mean, it's different.
It is fun. And they have, like, Squid Games and K-pop. And, like, that's the decor. It's
just giant flat screens playing, like, Blackpink nonstop.
Yeah, yeah. And this, in the third level seating area, there's just... It's just K-pop music videos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... I'm looking at this and being like, yeah, I don't. I'm pretty sure that ain't going to happen. Because what I figured out from my model before was that it does not matter what you plan, because your dad will just, in the middle of it, cancel all of it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm like, you know, you're trying to figure out, okay, what is likely to get canceled here and what's not. I'm like, there's no way. Yeah. Even though it's just a few blocks. Like, it's genius, because you get off the train. You don't have to ride the subway, because Bryant Park is right there. And Koreatown is also right, you know, just a few more blocks from there. And, you know, your parents don't like riding the subway. I think they're scared of the subway. I'm not totally sure what the precise rationale is. But you know, subway.
Yeah.
But no, not going to happen. Okay. So that's my thought going forward. So, of course, I'm tasked with, okay, how do we get all this? How do we do all this? How do we get there? Whatever, you know?
Yeah.
You know, people give me the itinerary, and I'm supposed to figure it out. So I say the night before, I say, all right, guys, we got to leave the house at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
The train leaves at 10:21. We're only like a mile from the train.
Yeah.
I have at times walked to and from the train. Yeah, I've even done it with the kids. Like, it's doable. You know, but we're not walking today, but that's just to get you a sense, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like there's security or anything like that. Okay, so walking is 1.6 miles, you know, which, I don't know, maybe some people, that's too crazy. I don't know. It's a 30-minute walk. Driving, which is what we're going to do, we're just going to drive, pop into a parking garage, and then there's a pedestrian bridge from the parking garage, and you go straight to the track.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm given like 21 minutes. If I were just going with the kids, we would leave more about 12:05, maybe even 12:06, 12:07.
Mm-hmm.
I drive this route every day because Claire's school's there. Like, I know exactly how to do it. And I've done the train to New York probably 100 times since we've gotten here with the kids and stuff, because that's a very go-to weekend thing. It's just scoop the kids up and get on the train.
Yeah.
So I tell them 10, but I'm giving a buffer. Because in my mind, I'm thinking you could probably do this at 10:08, 10:09,
mm-hmm,
and still make it. Because I've made it before in 10 minutes. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm giving us 21. Everyone's got this communicated. Got to leave at 10.
Yeah.
Everyone's ready at 10. Except your dad.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he ain't ready. And I've already built in some time for this. So I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. Run a few minutes. It's not a big deal. And then eventually, still just fucking around. I don't know. Get dressed. What's going on? 10:08 rolls around.
Kids,
and I'm
like, have their shoes on. Everybody's ready to go.
I had the kids fully dressed, ready to go at 9:30, because I know the game with kids. You don't know what's
crying,
going on. Dude, yeah. In the moment, if you got to move quickly and get them dressed, that's a disaster.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't count on it anyway.
So I just, if you're in a situation like that, for me, get them dressed and then let them watch TV and shit.
Yeah.
You know, because then they're just like, you know, chill. It's not like getting dressed to go. They've already dressed. They don't have to think about that as as another step. You just get in the car. They're ready, you know, your brother's even ready, usually sleeps really late, and your dad is not. So at 12:08, I'm like, all right, and then, okay, so we go. We shuffle out the house at 12:08. And I'm looking at this, I'm saying, I can make this. I know I can. We're going to have to hustle a little bit, but I can make it. And we start driving, and I'm sort of leading, I guess, but they know how to get there. Like I said, it's a straight shot, 1.6 miles from our house.
Yeah.
And they've been there before, whatever. And they do not keep up with me.
Yeah.
I'm not going 80 miles an hour on resident. I'm going, you know, 45, 50, you know, maybe 50 in like a, but really more like 45, you know, something like that. But like zooming, because we're trying to hit lights. That's the real question in this, is going to be lights. You want to make sure you can get through the lights so they don't turn red.
Yeah.
Because, you know? That's what's going to kill you. They just, your dad who's driving just chooses not to hit the gas. And I see him in that one stretch, because there's one long road that we go, really. You basically turn left, and that's you're just on a straight road, and he just doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Why is he not speeding up. But he hangs back.
Which is crazy because my dad's usually a pretty aggressive driver.
That's what I would think, you know. But he's just not. He's just hanging back. And so
just chilling.
They get caught up in lights and stuff. We do not. And we arrive. And I remember during this whole process, I was keeping notes and I was telling Liz, I was like, I want you to know, look at the time. It's 10:08.
Yes, yeah.
Let the record show it's 10:08 because we may miss this. And then we arrive at the place and it's 10:18, right? So 10 minutes. And that was a long drive because we got stuck behind some dumbass in the parking garage who was just, I don't know what the fuck he was doing.
Just sightseeing.
Just like rubberneck. There's almost no one in the parking garage. I don't know what he's, you know, he would have had hundreds of empty parking spots that he could have parked in, but he also didn't seem to be going to a particular part. I don't know. It was bizarre. But we still got there at 10:18, which means you still got 3 minutes to go to the train. I can get there. You just walk across the little pedestrian bridge and you're there.
Yeah.
That's plenty of time. But your parents don't arrive. Let you know. Let the record show. Had they kept up with me, we could get the train. We could hit the train. They didn't do that. So by the time they arrive, the train is missed. And then starts the question of, how do we allocate blame for all of this?
Yeah, that's the most important question when my family is interested.
That's the biggest question.
Yeah.
And it appears that that was hashed out in their vehicle. We were in a separate vehicle because there were just too many people to ride one vehicle because there were, eight, nine people? I don't know.
Yeah.
They had already hashed this out that it was going to be your mom's fault.
Hey, who's surprised there? Literally everything that happens, whether it's like a traffic jam or like the weather being uncooperative, literally anything. And you think I'm joking because who could blame a traffic jam on someone who's a passenger in the car? That actually happens in my family. My mom gets blamed for literally everything bad that happens, no matter how clearly an act of God or nature.
Yes, I would say she functions as a like stress absorber.
Yeah, she's just absorbing shock.
Yeah, yeah. It's not so much, do we have a plausible story of your culpability? It's more, when I get stressed or frustrated because something is happening, I have to offload that onto a person.
Right, and it can't just be like, oh, this sucks, I'm put out about it. It's like, this has to be someone's fault, and they have to apologize to me for it.
Right. And I mean, they do end up concocting causal stories, you know, but it's sort of the nature where it's like, well, yeah, I suppose if I hadn't done this 5 steps ago, you know, this wouldn't have occurred, right? So in the traffic jam situation, it's like it might be her fault because she was the one who wanted to go to a restaurant or something.
Right. She suggested we go to this restaurant rather than that restaurant. Now we're on the highway and there's a traffic jam. So it's her fault because if she hadn't suggested that, we wouldn't be here. And it's like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, if Christopher Columbus had never discovered the Americas, we might not all be here, and then we wouldn't be in this traffic jam. So fuck him, it's his fault.
I remember one when we were at their house and the electricity was going out because of, like, weather.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was her fault because she was the one who wanted to move to the house many years prior.
As though buying a house isn't the most bilateral thing that you can do in a marriage. Like, you actually have to have everyone's buy-in and everyone has to participate. Pay because you're using huge quantities of the family's money.
If you hadn't said and encouraged us to buy this house 4 years ago, we would not be sitting through this blackout right now. And so I just want you to sit with that. I swear to God that happened.
That actually happened. And my mom was like, I'm sorry.
I know. It was
like absolutely fucking maddening and crazy making.
I should have assessed the blackout risk a little better. And,
yeah, I should have known that this windstorm would happen and that we would have shoddy electrical work out here in the country. Yeah, I mean, what the hell?
Anyways.
Take some accountability.
So, you know, he's angry because, you know, a combination of miss this, maybe there's a brief realization it's his fault, maybe not. I think the causal story we get in this one is, it's her fault, and this, I love this. This is the greatest version of this. It's her fault because she did not sort of push him to get to be on time.
Right, which she could also get in trouble for, by the way, being too pushy about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I like the, like, you didn't make me do what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides just telling me, you know, we need to get up at 10 and be ready by 10. Besides just telling me, you also, it's your job to actually force me like I'm a child.
Right. You put it to me like an adult and gave me the opportunity to, you know, cooperate with what everybody else was doing, which everyone else managed to do.
Did, yeah. You know?
But that was wrong. You might have thought you were being light touch and kind of giving me my autonomy and not writing my ass about it, but wrong.
So is what it is, but that's important to know because he's stewing. So now, thankfully, we live here in the, you know, frequent train area. Trains come 4 times an hour. The express train, which we're looking for, will come 2x an hour, and then the non-express train 2x an hour. So if you're going to do, you know, where we're going, it doesn't make sense to take the local train, even though a local train would have come within 15 minutes. It makes sense to wait 30 minutes and take the express train because, you know, at the end of the day, you only get there 1 minute later, but you're on the train for like 25 minutes less.
Yeah.
And you'd rather spend those 25 minutes sitting in a train station than sitting on the train, especially with kids and all the rest of it. So we got to wait 30 minutes. All right, you know, no problem. We'll just go into the waiting room. You know, the train station. We have a legit train station. Get the kids some donuts. Your parents weirdly always buy them far more than they should purchase them, yeah, of these things. And interestingly, kids don't even eat all of it, but whatever. It's fine. We're just chilling. I'm not going to be critical of that in the moment, or ever, really.
But yeah.
I note it. And okay, your dad's stewing. He's not happy about the situation. But whatever, we're all just sitting there. And I think when I'm present, he's restrained, which I think maybe also upsets him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't feel comfortable firing off as he would, because he, for whatever reason, finds it inappropriate to do it with me present.
I think you worry him a little bit.
All right, so I'm sitting there, and again, it still falls on me, I guess, to tell people when to go, even though there's signs everywhere, yeah, about when the trains are coming and whatever. But that's fine. I'm like, all right, guys, let's go. And here's the other part. So they've decided that they are going to spend 1 day, I guess two nights in a hotel
in New York City, right? They don't like staying in our house.
2 nights, and I think, you know, they wanted to do something else, and so, I don't know, for whatever reason, the idea of, like, train in, train out, train in, train out, even though the train only takes, like, 50 minutes, that's, you know, I think they just maybe also like the idea of whatever, it doesn't matter.
Being in a fancy hotel, it's fine, okay.
Yeah, they're gonna do that for two nights, like I said.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, 2 nights, because it's just, it's one change of clothes.
Yeah.
But each of them has a roller thing and a second bag, like you would be on an airplane if you're maxing your space on the airplane.
They took,
you know,
more for one night than I take to Alabama when I'm going to be there for like 4 days.
Yeah, I mean, I go in the extreme other end. When I go to Texas for 5 days every summer, I pack everything that I need in a JanSport, like the generic JanSport backpack.
Travel light, travel light, travel light. It's going to make your life so much better.
They have the full rollers and then a second bag, whether it's a duffel bag or a backpack or whatever.
Plus, when they come to my house for Thanksgiving, they bring like huge Home Depot tubs full of stuff.
They do, like, yeah, those collapsible tubs.
My mother was like, do you have a food processor? I'm like, yeah, I have a small food processor. She's like, does it slice? I'm like, I don't have that attachment. But listen, what I do have is a mandolin.
Right.
Where you can very quickly and very efficiently slice whatever you're trying to slice. Celery, onions, yada, yada, yada. She's like, okay, all right, sounds good. And she brings her own food processor.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like the travel burden is just huge.
Yeah, it's important to understand they did not bring all of their stuff to the New York City, not even a third of it.
Yeah, no.
The rest of it is piled up. They bring, like, it's unfathomable for what they're doing. But this becomes important because We're not going to use the escalator because we have all this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you could, but, you know, let's not. Let's just use the elevator. All right, fine. That's fine. We take the elevator down to the platform. We get into the elevator, and it's full. You know, we got all of us in there, and there's another lady in there, and your brother just decides that he's going to step out of the elevator.
Right.
And I can't tell if he thinks that it's just simply too full to, like, close, or if he's uncomfortable. It could have closed, certainly, if people, you know, if you squeeze in there, you can, you know, tight, whatever. It would have been fine, but he steps out. Okay, so now we're in a situation where all of us are going down to the platform waiting for him. I actually tell him, because I'm realizing, like, oh, my God, I don't know how long this elevator is going to take to get back up and then come back down. And we got to walk all the way to the end of the platform because we're going to try to get on the back of the train because the back of the train is where you got the empty seats.
Yep.
You know, because it's the furthest walk and people want to be near the front of the train because when you get into Grand Central, you can pop out and you're right in the station. The back of the train, you got to walk all the way down the platform. So, like, strategically, we got a lot of people. We want to get seats. Let's go all the way to the back of the train.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. Okay. So I actually tell him, I said, go to the escalator. Like, you could just, that stuff you have, you can just ride on it on the escalator. I point it to him. He decides not to do that. So now your dad waits for him to come, you know, on a second trip on the elevator.
Yeah.
And we move to the back of the train on the platform, right? We're waiting for the train. The elevator slow, all the way up, all the way down. And then they got to find us and walk all the way to the end of the platform. And by the time the train arrives, they're headed that way. I can see them, but they're like three or four cars still in the other direction, which is fine, I guess. Like, you could still walk all the way down there. And they did walk all the way down there. They see us, like, it kind of works out, except, and here comes the great episode, the next episode. I hop onto the train thinking that everyone is going to be behind me except your dad and your brother, who are still kind of hustling down to get to the train. And we're going to get these seats in the middle, you know, in the middle of the car. And so I jump on and I get to the middle of the car where there are open seats. This was, remember, Black Friday, Thanksgiving. It's a pretty full train, much fuller than normal. But there's seats and we're in the very end of the, you know, it's set up where it actually works. But I turn back and there's no one back there. And now maybe, I don't know, this is not their fault. It may also be your fault or your mom's fault or whatever. No one followed me. I guess because you're waiting for your brother and your dad. I turn around and there's just other people behind me. Like 10, 15 other people behind me instead of my family behind me. They take all the seats and there are still seats. Like, there are still single seats, you know what I mean? Like, there are rows of three seats, and you can still get singles. But the, like, whole rows, they're not available. And when you're dealing with kids and whatever, like, people want to sit together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay, well, so ostensibly because your brother decided not to stay on the elevator, incomprehensibly, they don't get to the back train in time, which causes everyone to wait for them, which then causes us not to get seats.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. When you got kids, you can kind of nudge people around and they will eventually give up a seat so that the kids can sit together. That's one of the great train hacks. And not very many kids ride the train of that age. And yeah, pretty quickly, some people reorient themselves because, like I said, there are open seats, probably 10, 15 open seats in the car. Some people move around so the kids can sit down. But no one else is sitting.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, it's a 50-minute train ride. Not a big deal. I don't care if I sit. But as we get close, as we get about 40 minutes in, your dad starts to have some kind of episode.
Now, it's worth noting that the seat across from me was open.
But oh yeah, you sat. Yes,
I sat, and the seat across from me was open, And I was like, look, anybody could sit down. Anybody who needs to sit down could sit down. You know, you're going to have to sit next to a hot goth chick.
Yes, you were seated sort of like one row from where he was standing, because we were standing in the doorways. And it's fine to stand in the doorways, you know, and there are no stops, really, because it's an express train. So, and that row with the open seat was literally right by him.
Yeah.
And yes, there was a... yes, there was a goth girl, but not too crazy goth.
No, she was hot. She was like Billie Eilish looking.
Yeah, yeah, an average. I don't know, a toned down goth girl, yeah. I guess. He opted not to. Now I speculate that he was partially angry about the whole thing.
Yes, and there's a tendency here when one is angry, and this is unfortunate in my family. To try to make things even worse.
For yourself.
And you understand this when you begin to realize that my mom is the receiver of all abuse. And so if you make things worse for yourself and you're just gradually getting more mad and more worn down, it becomes more and more stressful for her.
Yeah, yeah. I have noticed this tendency.
It's super toxic.
Yeah, instead of try to mitigate things,
to recover, show a little bit of resilience. Nope.
Yeah, no, let's make it worse, and by harming myself even more, that will somehow make you feel worse for what you've done to me, even though rationally, to my mind, I'm like, I've not done this to you. There's a seat right there. Yeah. You're doing it to yourself. Okay, so, you know, anger at a variety of things at this point, missing the train, missing the seats, which was really your brother's fault, decides to stand. Now, apparently... You know, he's got a pacemaker, his heart's not, I don't know. Your mom kind of vaguely explained that he's not supposed to be standing for long periods of time. And he starts kind of, whatever, I don't know, passing out? I don't know what to describe it as, but about 40 minutes in, like, he's full on, I don't know, heart's not working, I don't know what it is.
I think it's just a form of syncope. I think my mom thinks it's heart-related, but it's actually not heart-related. It's just like he gets lightheaded standing up too much.
Yeah, she was like, his knees were locked. I'm like, I don't know what that means. But, you know, they usher him to a seat. And, of course, when people see that someone's, like, about to pass out, they scatter. And actually, I think it was like must have been 80-plus-year-old man gave him a seat.
The woman who was sitting there with her parents, they got up to give him a seat. And she said, you know, I understand. My mom and dad are 84. And so a couple of 84-year-olds had to get out of the way so my dad, who's 20 years younger, could sit down.
Yeah, and I mean, whatever, they were, you know, disability can hit you at any age, but you know, this was a self-inflicted wound as part of acting petulant when he had a seat right there that he could have, and he ostensibly knows about his limitations, but did it anyways. So, all right, whatever, it's kind of a weird situation because you definitely feel sorry for anyone in that situation, but then you're also like, I just saw you do this to yourself.
Yeah.
All right. So we get out. Cool. I hope this is not a boring story. To me, it's, and you know, people can probably relate with their own dysfunctions. Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is when we get out of the train is walk to the hotel, which is like 2 blocks away. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Bryan Park is another like 2 blocks away. So it's very easy. And we walk to the hotel. And, you know, they check in and they go put their stuff up. And then, you know, your dad comes out and we're going to ostensibly walk to Bryan Park.
Yep.
Now, if people listen to the prior episode, they'll know my prediction was that whatever we have planned will get immediately replaced with let's go eat at a restaurant instead.
Yes.
And your dad will just completely, we'll have 7 other people fully geared up to do an activity that everyone's agreed to do, including him. And in the moment, he'll just say, we're not going to do that. We're going to go to a restaurant instead.
It's happened before.
And then, and of course, amusingly, the prediction involves going to some...
Like just, an American-style diner.
Yes, an unremarkable. So the first place that we pass after we dropped everything off at the hotel, the first place we pass was something called like Red Diner or whatever.
Red Flame Diner.
And I pointed at it and I looked at you and I laughed and like, you know, ha, wouldn't it, you know, this is probably what he wants to do. And I didn't actually think, you know, I wasn't calling my shot. I was just sort of riffing on what we've said before about, you know, what he does.
Yeah.
And he did actually stop down and try to get everyone to go into the diner.
Yeah.
And like, why don't we eat instead? Like, well, yeah. You know, we have this whole thing and the girls and there's the Holiday Village and there's food there as well.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, I already knew Koreatown's not happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, my thinking was, you know, one of the big draws of Bryant Park is they have all these food stalls set up.
Yeah, there's lots of food stalls.
You know, they have the Baked Cheese House.
Which is a big draw.
Huge draw. Oh, my God.
People love the Baked Cheese House. It's like a raclette place.
Yeah, they like take a torch to a wedge of raclette until it melts onto a piece of bread, and then they put some prosciutto on it or whatever.
It's choice.
It's incredible to watch, and I imagine would be quite good to eat, but I'm not...
They also do like French onion soup with raclette. I mean, they have a bunch of stuff.
That's just one of the like 10 stalls there. You could get any. When I went with my mom, she got like a avocado sandwich
they have
anything.
Sandwiches. They have Greek food.
You could just get sweets like if you want.
Persian food. I mean, again, they have tons of sweets. They had an Indian food stall. I mean, they have everything. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's a fun little thing. So I'm thinking, all right, that's going to be what we're going to do, which is cool. You know, hey, that's actually partaking in the activity, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe on some level that's better than Koreatown because Koreatown you can go anytime. This is a seasonal event.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now I predicted that this would be related to cold, but it was 50 degrees. So
The
issue of people underdressing for the cold did not arise. But
yeah.
We learned now that cold or not, it's not just let's go to the restaurant to escape the cold. It's also just like I prefer to just do restaurants.
Yeah.
The other thing is as part of him waking up late and not getting ready on time is they didn't eat breakfast. And I remember I pointed that out to you in the car. Yeah. I was like, your brother and your dad failed that test.
Big problems with breakfast hygiene in my family.
Your brother and your dad failed that test. And so I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, they're going to get hungry and upset.
It's the most important meal of the day.
Well, just do the math. You know, if you're getting on the train at 10, you're not going to be in the place till 11. And then you're, you know, if you didn't eat breakfast, I don't know. It seems pretty straightforward to me. Okay. So we're going to Bryant Park. Interesting, we made it there. I thought, man, we're not going to, we narrowly dodged the diner detour. We get there. Your dad and your brother disappear immediately. That was the other thing. I was like, they weirdly pair off and like don't participate. In the festivities. We're doing stuff with your mom and the kids, which are fun. We get some ornaments. They ride the carousel. You get them the little treat that we were talking about, the like ice cream cone that's not actually ice cream. And your dad, I think, calls, or did he come back? But one way or another, he conveys that he has, in fact, found the sort of like... the restaurant that's in the park.
Yeah, Bryant Park Grill. Or whatever.
And you think, oh, the food stalls, right? Yeah. That's where people come for, those like incredible food stalls. No, like in the back of the restaurant, they have this like tent that they set up and you can sit and he just wants to do the sit down restaurant there. And like, it's whatever, but it's like, all right, prediction came true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it all came true.
All he wanted to do. And not just eat. That's the important thing. And this is how I'm learning more and more as I construct the model. It's all about the full restaurant experience.
Yeah.
He wants to get everyone to sit down in a restaurant where the nature of the restaurant is that it's going to require you to take 2-3 hours, or at least you can make it do that.
Yeah.
Right? If you decide to
get
order an app and go
dessert.
Real slow with it, and then dessert, and then get like that's all he wants to do in life.
Yeah.
And you know, on one hand, I guess whatever. On another hand, when I look at it, and this is maybe just being a mean-spirited speculator, I think what he likes about it, having now been in this situation many, many times, is that it's like a captive audience meeting in a union setting because no one can go anywhere. And also, your family doesn't, they've all learned how to like talk to engage with him, which is to just kind of repeat back whatever he says.
Yeah.
And never say anything, like figure out what topic he's interested in. When he says something, just repeat it back. And that's that. Don't be like, I don't know. What about this? You know, don't offer an alternative like thought. Just repeat it back. And maybe he'll also get on to one of the stories. You know, he tells the same 10 stories. And, you know, I think that's it. Because you're like, if you like restaurant food, dude, we have the food stalls. Or you could order at home, dude, get restaurant food that way.
We get into this restaurant. The kids are hungry. They weren't permitted to eat at Bryant Park, which would have been quick. And so they're obviously getting bored. It's not a restaurant for kids. They don't have a kids menu.
No.
They had like $37 salads. Like it's that kind of place in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a gimmick restaurant that is set up for the Bryant Park thing. It's not a real, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like eating food at Disneyland or something. Right. Like, it's just, this shit's expensive.
So expensive, and they're so overworked. They have hundreds of tables set up in this place, and the waiter is, like, clearly harried and rushing from table to table, and I'm like, this is going to take forever. I don't want this $37 salad. I'm going home. Forget it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're trying to call. That's the other funny, you know, they just sort of disregard for the other parties involved. Like, they're trying to cobble together some, maybe we can get them to produce something that a kid would like.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nothing like that on the menu. And you're like, you know where they have things for kids, right? If you just walk about 100 yards over there, there's like 20 food stalls.
Yeah.
Some of which, you know, sell burgers and chicken and, you know, but no, we gotta, cause we gotta do the sit down restaurant. We did not. In fact, I remember even looking at you, we were probably there for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like, do we order? How the fuck does this work?
Yeah. We hadn't even ordered yet because it was so slow going because the restaurant was so overloaded.
So we never ordered anything. And you and I, eventually left. And you know, cause they wanted to keep the kids with them in the hotel and whatever. And so,
yeah,
you know, that was the,
one of our kids was like, I don't want to stay with them.
Well, Claire, I mean, this is, and I put this maybe on you and your mom to some extent, I don't know, in the moment it upset me a little bit. And then, you know, as I go within about 10 minutes, I was like, whatever. Claire is given this insane choice set. And if you're listening and you have kids, you'll know, you're talking about a 4-year-old here. They struggle with choice in general.
Yes.
Even if it's a basic choice, like, do you want this meal for dinner or do you want this other meal for dinner? There's only two choices. They agonize over this.
Yeah.
They struggle. Oh, God, but I like both. Oh, but so if I choose that, I don't get that. Now imagine that choice, which is already difficult for a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And you start adding things to the different choices. So there's still two choices, but it's like, instead of, do you want burger or chicken nug, like a Happy Meal choice, mm-hmm. you go, okay, burger or chicken nug, but here, let me take it one step further. If you pick the burger, we go to the trampoline park, right? If you pick the nug, we go see a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I like the... I like all of these things, and now I'm going to not get some of them. And maybe I like the burger more than the nug, but maybe I like the movie more than the trampoline park. And now I got to weigh all that, and they're so incommensurate. Even adult starts to struggle. Now I add a third item to each option choice and a forethought. Oh my God. And you're watching people try to discuss this with a four-year-old and you're like, a full-grown adult is going to struggle with this choice options because there's four things if you do it this way and there's four totally other things if you do it that way. There are these mutually exclusive package of things and you're asking a four-year-old to deal with this. And some of the things come later. And eventually she went the way I thought she would go, which is whatever option gets her the thing that she likes in the shortest term, that's the one she's going to go with. Even if it has some cost long, because she's not going to be able to put that into her head. So the thing she would like more than anything is go with mom, because I like mom.
Yeah.
And even if you're like, yeah, but you understand if you go with mom, you don't get to do all this Christmas stuff. You don't get to go see the lights. You don't get to do the Rockettes. And then you're not going to be with Jane, you know. But I do like mom, and maybe we could make a cookie. And it's like, yeah, you could. But it does. This is the shortest term way to get something you want.
Yeah.
So that's the way you're going to go. I'm like, so I definitely sat there and was like, that was a mistake. I don't know why that was pitched to her as if she could make that decision. It turned out, and this is, again, what I also was thinking in the moment was, okay, so she's going to pick go with mom because that gets the thing she wants. But then she's also going to pretty quickly realize, oh, I also want to do those things in New York. And so probably I'm just going to have to take her back to New York. And then that's what happened the next day. We woke up and she's like, I want to be with Jane. I want to do this and this. And I'm like, okay. So I rode her back on the train early in the morning so that she could have that day, which was fine. I didn't mind doing that, honestly.
Sorry.
I kind of like also once you drop her off in New York, then I'm just all alone in New York.
Yeah.
I can walk around. I don't have to worry about like looking after anyone. I can just go do what I need to do. I got you some Japanese milk bread. So that was fun.
It's good for French toast.
But yeah, I mean that was the event. I know that was the whole. Well, we got about 10 more minutes, but that was the great outing. That was what we were all looking forward to. Is what? How will this train wreck actually unfold? And we had missing trains, missing seats, some kind of cardiac related event.
Maybe cardiac related.
Maybe cardiac. We had the attempt to derail into the diner, didn't succeed. Then attempt to derail into second restaurant, which did succeed. And, you know, it was, I would say, a pretty big failure. The kids had fun, though.
I think the kids had fun.
They got to ride the carousel.
They got to ride the carousel.
And buy some ornaments and stuff.
Yeah, they got to pick out some ornaments for their trees, so.
Yeah, you know, from their perspective, it was fine. But and it went about the way I expected it to, though just in different ways. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's exhausting having your family in town when you've gotten used to living on your own. And I think of all of the people who are like my age or only a little bit younger living at home, and I just feel for them, man. You don't want to live with your parents when you're an adult. You want to be able to do your own thing. And then it's, you know, your parents are around and you're kind of regressed back to a younger version of yourself and you're kind of helpless. And it's just rough. But that's the holidays for you. That's part of the experience. I have an article here.
I do too.
Entitled, In the World of Sexual Fetishes, Crossing the Political Aisle is a Kink.
Yeah.
Does a forced vote for the other side get your pulse racing? There's a dominatrix for that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Roxy Ray is lying on her pink bedspread, her bleach blonde hair draped over her black teddy, thigh-high stockings emerging from her leopard print stilettos. She turns her backside to the camera and purrs, that looks like just the view to persuade you to vote Republican for Daddy Trump. We both know you don't know what it's like to be an alpha. You're just a beta, obeying, doing everything I say. Pretty soon you'll be preaching and posting the Republican way all over your social media. The best part is you'll really believe it.
Oh, I would have thought it would have gone the other direction. But I suppose there's a market for both sides, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's like a humiliation thing.
Yeah. Ray received her first request for a political humiliation video in March 2021. Oh, there we go. from a fan who DM'd her, writing, "One of the most difficult and humiliating sacrifices to make is to vote for a Republican candidate when you're a Democrat. If I were to surrender control of my vote for you, that would be the ultimate sacrifice."
Would it?
"My brother in Christ, you're all just liberals. Liberals, liberals, you're a liberal, you're a liberal, you're all just liberals." I don't know.
Is she a Republican?
Yeah, I guess. I don't care.
Oh, but that's would be an interesting turn if she's like, "No, I'd just do it for, you know,
she's just
a market.
Making money, I think." But like, you, the fact that people have internalized these differences is so key to their identities when they're the most minuscule differences in the world. Right? It's I mean, I guess something that you expect to happen in any culture, but you're all just liberals. You're going to get into the same wars. You're going to fuck up the welfare state the same ways. It's just sad. It's just depressing.
Yeah, I'm scanning it here. It seems to go in that they're not operating it in the other directions, or do they? I don't know.
"Pay me $150 and I'll make a 5-minute video telling you not to vote at all." Be like, "You don't want to be involved in this. Keep your hands clean. Don't bother with it."
God, this article's long.
It's really long.
They went for the full-blown pictures and everything.
I mean, for the readership, it is probably the most taboo thing you can come up with.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, for this audience, yeah, this must be interesting, yes.
Yeah, you know. Ooh, someone telling me I'm going to be a Republican. Good God, man. What has to happen to you to get to that point?
Yeah.
I blame the media, frankly.
That's interesting, though. I'm glad someone wrote it.
Yeah, sure. It's great.
I have...
We kink shame on this podcast.
We have... I don't know if I talked about this in a prior podcast. I've been keeping track of it on Twitter. We have, of course, the Swedish union's battle against Tesla,
mm-hmm.
which continues to heat up. I don't know if you've been keeping track of the developments there, but... You know, Tesla came in there, much like McDonald's in Denmark many years ago, which I've written about, and decided they weren't going to follow the collective agreement for the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way this usually goes is the unions spend a couple of years trying to have talks and explain to them, no, you don't understand here. This is like how our labor system works. You have to abide by, I mean, you don't have to like legally, but everyone needs to do it because that's how our system works. Like all our regulation essentially comes through these agreements, and like this is how we do things here. And you know, that seems to work most of the time, but occasionally you get, especially an American company, and I guess especially one led by kind of like someone like Musk, who decides, no, I don't have to. And so the mechanics went on strike, and as you know, what happens in the Nordic countries when they decide to go on strike is it's not just the individuals involved who strike. They start then sending out requests to their friends in other unions, mm-hmm. and say, "We want you to start doing secondary strikes or solidarity strikes that will cripple the company in other ways," right? So
yeah.
If it's just the mechanics who step out, that could certainly be a problem because, you know, you need mechanics to run a car company. But, you know, what would be better is what if the people who work in the ports just don't unload Tesla cars?
Yeah.
Because they don't make them there. They ship them there. Okay, so the dock workers say, fine, any Tesla shipments, we're not going to accept them. And then, oh, here's another one. What if the electricians refuse to repair any of the charging stations for Tesla? All right, cool. The electricians say, yep, sure, no problem. We're not going to charge, not going to do any of that. What if the office cleaners stop going into the Tesla offices and cleaning them every day? Okay, we'll stop doing that. In other strikes, though, not this one yet, I remember in the Toys R Us one, the garbage men just stopped picking their garbage up. That's always a fun one. But then you had a new development in this very recently,
mm-hmm.
which I was very intrigued by because it involves a lot of technicalities, which is fun. I love the technicalities. The postal workers said, we're going to stop delivering anything to the Tesla, any of the Tesla locations.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that's interesting. They're like, you know, when you read it, it's sort of like, okay, so they're not going to be able to get some parts, mm-hmm. I guess, because those go through the mail and they won't get their letters, but who gives a fuck? You know, I didn't think too much of it. I just thought, okay, it's another network logistics industry that mm-hmm. touches them that's going to try to cut them off. But in fact, that was a much bigger deal than I initially thought when I was reading articles about it, because when you have a car company and you're selling new cars, you need license plates.
Yeah.
Right? You register the car with the car authority, and then they send you a license plate. That's how it works. License plates are produced by a license plate company, mm-hmm. you know, there. A factory there makes the Swedish license plates. And then they give the license plates to the Swedish Transit Authority. Mm-hmm. And then the Swedish Transit Authority sends them through the mail to whoever is receiving them, mm-hmm. including Tesla. So by not, the postal worker strike was going to make it and has made it so that they don't get any license plates. Mm-hmm. And if you can't get a license plate, you can't sell the car.
Yeah.
And Tesla tried to come back and say, well, we'll just pick up the license plate directly from either the factory that makes them or the Swedish Transit Authority. And the Swedish Transit Authority says, we can't do that. We have a contract with the PostNord, you know, postal company that we can only send these things through the mail. Mm-hmm. So we can't allow you to do that. And apparently, and I was reading an article, strikes in Sweden are considered force majeure.
Okay.
And what that means, force majeure is usually like act of God. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that you can't be sued for not fulfilling your contractual obligations as a company.
Yeah.
If there's a strike. So through this technical web of contracts and rules, Tesla has to get its license plates through the mail, but the postal workers can also just choose not to carry those license plates to Tesla. And there's nothing Tesla can do about it. Except Tesla has filed multiple lawsuits attempting to overthrow this. One of the lawsuits apparently said that they could collect the license plates directly from the transit agency. Another judge said not so much. So I don't know what to do about that. But, oh, Elon Musk has been tweeting about it. He said this is insane. He can't. So that's great. Mm-hmm. You know. But in the Financial Times article about it, they talked to the union there.
Yeah.
Right. So they've got these mechanics who are on strike. They've got some of these other workers who are not on strike. They're just refusing to do anything that deals with Tesla. So they're still working the docks. They're just anything Tesla they don't do. Okay. And you're wondering, okay, so what are they going to say about it? Mm-hmm. Okay. And of course, they tell you, look, this is our labor model. We don't really usually have to do this. It's very weird. You know, we need them to agree. We've been trying to explain this to them for a while now. But then they say this, and this blew my mind a little bit. Union leaders say that they have enough funds to support the striking workers who currently receive about 130% of their pay from unions to cover holidays and pensions as well for decades, as the emergency fund used for payments is rarely tapped. We can carry on for a long, long time, said Nilsson, who is the union official. So they are paying these striking workers 130% of their normal pay.
Wow.
And saying that we have enough money that we could do this for decades if we need to.
Okay.
So, balls in your court.
Checkmate.
Balls in your court. That's wild. And this is, you know, like I say, I try to always speak the gospel of the Nordic labor unions, because as he says, we rarely do this. He says the reason our strike fund is so big is we just don't really ever have to use it. And for that reason, I think people sometimes don't take their labor union seriously. They're much more interested in like a French labor union who has to go to the street and like set buildings on fire and stuff. But in a way, their situation is vastly more radical because they are so powerful that they just, there's, you know, employers don't put up the fight.
Yeah.
They're just like, it's fucking pointless. Just do what they want to do, you know? Yeah. And I mean, they're reasonable. It's not like they demand really crazy shit, but like, that's, and then you can finally see it. You can say, okay, so we don't, you know, how can we test whether Matt's theory, which is that they're so successful that they don't ever have to do very much because the employers are just completely cowed, or this other theory, which is that they're real moderate, look, they're not doing very much. And the answer is, well, let's see an employer step out of line.
Yeah.
And see what they do. And here's what they do. Everything striking around it, shut down the whole company, 130% of your pay for striking, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
I mean, here, when you strike here, you know, the unions will pay you from their strike fund. But it's usually something like, I don't know, you know, 20, 30%, 40% of what you normally make. And of course, you lose your health care because of our unique way of doing health care. You know, employers can try, you know, the union could, I guess you could go try to get an Obamacare plan while you're striking. But like, you know, that's the situation you're in.
Yeah.
You lose your health insurance for the most part. And, you know, the unions can only really manage to pay, you know, 30-40%, and then, you know, maybe they could do it for a few months. Like, that was what was so great about the UAW strike, was that they were very strategic about where they were striking and how long they were striking. And a lot of that was because they didn't want to deplete their strike fund.
Yeah.
Well, here they're like, we don't ever use this thing. So it's so fucking massive. Like, if we wanted to, we could just pay striking workers for literally decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, that probably, for the most part, an employer looking at that just says, I don't want to deal with that. So let's just go ahead and abide by the agreement. Tesla has decided not to do that. So that's the place, to me, that's the great labor struggle to watch at the moment. How long will it take for Tesla to give in?
Yeah.
You know, Elon is a crazy character who behaves in very bizarre ways. So maybe, you know, this could be a unique situation. But also, maybe it'll be like every other situation we've ever seen like this before, where an American company goes into one of these countries and decides that it's not going to play ball, which is within a few months, once the unions get going, they figure out what they need to do.
Yeah.
So that's the exciting thing at the moment. That's what we have. It's an hour seven of content. So pretty good.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed.
All right, let me get Rick Perry lined up.
Adios, mofo.